Welcome to Forecast News with Millie and Afshin, where we're talking you through some worldly events coming up in the week you think you should know about. If you're new here, please subscribe and give your comments on the events we discuss. This is election week, US presidential election week. Election special. But there's a lot before we get to the election, which of course is on Tuesday. But we're going to start Monday, 4th of November, 2024, to tell you what's going to be happening before then. So firstly, we have on Monday the UN Security Council talking about the Middle East, Gaza and Lebanon, so specifically happening very much in the background of this election, and should be very much at the forefront as well when it comes to voting. UNICEF just said a few hours ago, that the entire population of northern Gaza is at imminent risk of death. As requested by Russia, they're going to be talking about the implementation of the Resolution 2735, which was adopted in June, calling on Hamas to accept a proposed ceasefire, even though, as they say, it's the US and Israel who aren't accepting ceasefire agreements. They're also going to be talking about North Korea's testing last week of the Hwasong-19 intercontinental ballistic missile, which apparently, according to South Korea's military, was designed to strike the US in this election week. And in response, the US flew on Sunday a long-range bomber in a trilateral drill with South Korea and Japan. And this also may be to do with why EU's Joseph Borrell is going to be in South Korea on this Monday as well, particularly with regard to North Korean troops apparently in Russia. So it seems, therefore, there may be a renewed new war, really, between the US and the EU against North Korea, as we kind of suggested last week, in the midst of a war in the Middle East. And this is all happening ahead of the US election.
Pretty bad that all sounds. I mean, yeah, obviously it's disappeared off the NATO propaganda media, the genocide in the G word in Gaza. Instead, it's as if, if you were to look at this family-owned propaganda sheet that has spread so much lies to help the Holocaust in the Middle East, as if all that's important is Russia, China, and Iran, no North Korea this time in this one, they are behind all the meddling and whatever the election has been meddled with by Russia, Iran, and China. I mean, interestingly, Moldova, where they ban political parties, opposition press and all the rest of it, because they have this CIA cutout president who's been reelected. They were going before it, oh, the election is going to be rubbish because Russia's interfered with it. It's amazing how quickly they managed to explain it when it goes the NATO way,
the way they want.
They go, yes, fantastic, it went well.
Yes.
We can, I mean, I know we're going to go to Tuesday for the election, but similarly, I suppose if Harris wins, we won't be getting headlines about, like, Monday's headline in the New York Times that somehow the election was meddled with at all.
Yeah. Or what they'll say is they shut down any election meddling if it goes in the way that they like. You're right. It kind of depends on the outcome. But then on Monday as well, speaking of Russia, obviously accused of interfering in the U.S. election. On Monday, it's the Russia's Day of People's Unity. We mention on this show that Russia often seems to have a national day with various different themes. It's almost like there's one every day of the year. But this is quite an important one. I think not hugely celebrated in the country, but it's a very nationalist holiday. There are often.
What do you mean? 1612? Have you forgotten what happened in 1612?
Well, of course, it commemorates here when the Polish troops were removed from Moscow as part of the Polish-Lithuanian occupation of Moscow. That is what it's meant to signify, but today signified in Russia as being all about strength and solidarity of the country. So I suppose important for a lot of people in Russia, particularly right now, and relevant to the young people of Russia. But this coincides also with the first day of the Valdai Discussion Club, annual meeting in Sochi, and that is the Russian, big Russian think tank, for people who don't know, quite important within the government. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and President Putin will be speaking at this event at some point in the week. It's going to be going on for a few days, starting on Monday. So it doesn't really care. Sorry, it doesn't seem as though Russia really cares that much about anything going on with North Korea, or what the Western media are talking about as regards North Korea, or perceptions of it by the US, or even really the US election at all. It's kind of getting on with its own things.
Yeah, I mean, they have said, haven't they, Russia has no preference either way. I mean, one would hope, like all people for peace, they all want around the world Jill Stein to win on the election day. But yeah, it's interesting that Unity Day is about the Polish-Lithuanian Pact and the three centuries that have elapsed since then, because it's not too long ago that US press agencies were spreading lies about Russian missiles attacking Poland. And this, of course, was about Unity Day on Monday is about the Russian victory against Poland. Poland now a complete Washington proxy state, although maybe in the next few years, we'll see how it tries to partition off Ukraine as Ukraine collapses under the weight of NATO, Washington-sponsored catastrophe. Because either way, it looks like the dictator Zelensky is on the way out. I noticed the German minister, Annalena Baerbock, the Green, because Green movement activists in Western Europe are they appear to act completely as CIA cutout, will be with the dictator of Ukraine
on Monday. Well, you meant, kind of with that as well, on Monday, the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is going to be with new NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte as they're meeting in Berlin at the Federal.
I like the way you always call him Rutte, because clearly he is in a rut being in NATO because he's a servant. But to our Dutch viewers, it is Rutte, I suppose. Yeah.
But Rutte is probably more fitting, as you say, which is why we have the name. But they're going to be doing a press conference there. And it's Rutte's first official visit to Germany since his new post. Obviously, he was the Prime Minister of Netherlands, but clearly had more important things on his agenda to be doing instead of running that country. The main topic, again, I think, will be the North Korean soldiers apparently supporting Russia in Ukraine. So clearly going to be a very big topic this week.
Russia denies.
Koreans.
Russia denies that story, I think, and North Korea denies it.
Well, I don't think they don't sort of confirm it, but they don't deny it. And Putin certainly didn't deny it last week. And we mentioned
deny anything these days.
Episode though,
accused of so much, it'd be difficult to deny everything, wouldn't it?
True, but I think he was directly asked at a conference, and he kind of gave a bit of a non-response.
Why would they need North Korean troops?
Well, actually, I tell you what, we'll actually come back to this later in the week, and there could be some sort of evidence for it. But this is all happening on Monday ahead of the big day.
I think Lukashenko of Belarus has denied it, said there's absolutely nothing to suggest this is true.
Yeah, well, I guess he wouldn't know, would he? Because he's not North Korea or Russia.
Wait. Voice of America. Kremlin denies North Korean military joining any Russian war in Ukraine element. I've got it here. So, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. But it seems
NATO propaganda is amazing, because obviously it used to say that Trump was a CIA asset. No, it was a Kremlin asset, that he'd been blackmailed by a prostitute in a Moscow hotel. I mean, this kind of rubbish. Where is this information about North Korean troops coming from? It comes from intelligence. In other words, the same people that said Trump was a Russian asset, that there was WMD in Iraq. Why does everyone just believe?
Well, it's still said reported, as we mentioned on last week's episode, there was leaked recordings from alleged Russian soldiers talking about the incoming North Korean troops. And I suppose whether you want to believe that or not is up to you. You can listen to the recordings. I'll say we will come back to this later in the week and see what
South Korea is mulling arms for Kiev, the dictator of Kiev. in response.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully all of this nonsense will be over by Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly
seems- I mean, this is all proxy garbage, to coin a phrase that Genocide Joe uses.
Yeah, well, they certainly seem to be using this as an excuse to hate on Russia more, and then North Korea through proxy of that. But I think we better get to the exciting day, Tuesday, the 5th of November. It's finally here.
There'll be mass slaughter in Gaza, sorry, on Monday night and on Tuesday, as the Israelis, armed to the teeth by British, American, EU weaponry, before the US election, tries to exterminate as many men, women, and children as possible. But yeah, go to what you say is the most exciting.
Arguably, perhaps not going to change too much, regardless of who's voted in. But obviously, we know it's going to be between Republican Trump and Democrat Kamala Harris. We know,
and Green candidate Jill Stein, who's on every ballot across the country, but has got no airplay at all.
Well,
for some reason.
We've got Independence Jill Stein, we've got Cornel West, we've got Chase Oliver still in the running. And I suppose, I mean, we know very much the result is going to be dependent on these seven swing states, as we keep hearing. Different polls, even today, are suggesting different outcomes. There are some polls that are saying Trump is going to win in all of these states. Some are saying Kamala Harris. So it kind of depends on the demographic of the people surveyed in these polls. So we still don't quite know. And obviously it would depend as well if people supporting these independents like Jill Stein, Cornel West, Chase Oliver, if they at the last minute decide they're going to vote for one of the main parties, Trump or Harris, then that could very well change the vote. We still don't know, but I think the last few elections have been a shock, haven't they? I think that was a big surprise when Trump won in 2016, at least to many people. It was very unclear whether or not he was going to win. It was still.
Well, I'm not sure it was a surprise. I think a lot of, there's no democracy. We have to emphasize to Forecast News viewers, this is no democracy, because otherwise Jill Stein would have been given equal airtime. So would Cornel West, Dr. Professor Cornel West. Where has Jill Stein been on the media? They just block her out because she opposes absolutely the military-industrial complex and the wars that have killed so many people during Holocaust Harris's vice presidency. So,
I mean,
how can this be an election that's fair? The candidates have not been given equal time. Yeah. She wasn't even on the debates, Jill Stein, and yet she's on every ballot. This is a sham election. Believe that it is. And of course, Jill Stein is the only candidate truly divorced from big money that really runs the United States, an oligarchy system, not a democratic system, and where millions, as we say on this show, cannot eat tonight, where tens of thousands get shot dead every year, where it's just horrific internally and externally, and it is dying. The US empire is dying. And it's symptomatic on all these newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, on the election point, this isn't just the US. This happens in many countries where election takes place. It's about the funding, isn't it? And the backing behind certain parties, which is why candidates with less funding, particularly independents, typically don't get the same coverage that the main parties do. That's not exclusive to the United States, although, of course, some people, as you say, do find that very problematic. And it is, as you're right. But I guess, obviously, it's the business of the American people who they want to vote in. But I guess we're no closer to a prediction, really, are we? I haven't a clue.
Israel usually gets its candidate in. It controls the elections, so many have seen. And Israel wants Trump in. Miriam Adelson, who runs the United States elections, it seems to be the widow of a casino mogul, Sheldon Adelson. You don't get much money if you bet on, in some countries, betting is illegal, I should say. But if you bet on Trump to win, you don't win much money. Whereas if you bet on Holocaust Harris, you do win money. The bookies are more or less unanimous. Have you seen any bookie agency or gambling agency in the whole world that says that Holocaust Harris is the favorite to win? No.
Okay, well, glad to know you're going to be making some money out of this election then.
No, there's no money to be made either way. The only money to be made is Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics. What are the other? Palantir. A whole bunch of these companies are going to make loads of money, and they're going to extort it from the hundreds of millions of the dispossessed of the United States out of this election over the dead bodies of men, women, and children in Gaza and in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, we don't know who's going to win. If you're watching this and you're watching it before the election, let us know in the comments who you think it's going to be. We'll have to talk the rest of the week as though it could be either. But it's not the only thing that's happening on Tuesday. China, I don't think, really cares that much about the US election, because in China, on Tuesday until Sunday, it's the 7th China International Import Expo in Shanghai. Huge business gathering, international. At the opening night, we've got China's Premier Li Qiang and Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico, who's going to be there. There should be leaders from Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Malaysia, Mongolia, and Serbia, which is attending. So again, countries which are very much shrugging off the election and just doing their own thing. Other countries don't really care massively, do they?
Yeah, interesting, because Trump says he's going to put 100% tariffs on Chinese imports, which would mean the end of the Apple computer company, obviously, very complex supply chains for Apple products. So goodbye to the iPhone and Mac computers and all of that, because no one really takes Trump seriously when he says that. But China is the global superpower of this millennium, and the most powerful country by GDP, by purchasing power parity. So yeah, interesting. Fitzo will be there. He survived assassination attempts like Trump did, arguably, for opposing Lloyd Austin and the Pentagon and Bill Burns and Jake Austin and who are these? Butcher Blinken. Hopefully all, I mean, these people will all be gone, won't they, by Tuesday evening. Tuesday evening they'll be gone by.
Yeah.
So they'll wish they were at the Chinese import conference.
Yeah, so well, not really relevant for us to mention again, though, as you mentioned, though, I'm sure many of them will be working still behind the scenes. Of course, China as well has got import tariffs coming in from the EU on electric vehicles that we've spoken about in previous weeks. The EU, though, not invited to this summit. But then on the same day as well, it just shows there's the Kyrgyzstan summit of Turkic leaders, Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Turkey, and Uzbekistan, and Hungary and Turkmenistan are going to be there as observer states. Hungary's Viktor Orban and Turkey's Erdogan have previously attended. So again, that's a big summit that's going on as well, in conjunction with this one in Shanghai on Tuesday. Again, they're not really caring what's going on over in the United States. And then meanwhile, Giorgia Meloni of Italy is making Mark Rutte, as I call him. I don't know if he's on a little journey of Western Europe this week to talk about these, you say, alleged North Koreans supporting Russia and trying to get some backing against that, against the North Koreans. I don't know, but this is all happening at the backdrop of the election on Tuesday.
Hmm. I mean, it's interesting you say they don't care in China and all these other countries, because I suppose after the Kazan-Russia conference, BRICS conference this year, which some remark on as being the seminal event of our age, whatever Harris or Trump does in terms of tariffs and all the rest of it, we've seen Holocaust Harris genocide chose sanctions fail against Russia and China and so many other countries, Nicaragua, Venezuela, in the Sahel. They don't really care about US legislation, because the United States is still purchasing oil from Russia. The European Union is still buying oil from Russia this winter. It'll survive the winter because of Russia. And Russia is paying Ukraine transit fees for the oil going through Ukraine to the dictator Kiev. So there's a surface view of tariffs and all of that, and then there's the real economy, the kind of surface, which is written about in the oligarch-owned newspapers and rubbish television stations. And then there's the reality of people trying to trade, do business, trying to make a more prosperous world and a more free world.
Yeah. No, it's all very, very interesting how this is all going on under the surface, and many people can't see this is going on, as you say. But we better move on to Wednesday, 6th of November, day after the election, whoever's going to be in power. But on Wednesday, going back to the North Korea-Russia situation, on Wednesday, the Russian Federal Council is due to ratify this treaty on comprehensive strategic partnership with North Korea. And this is a treaty that was signed in June when Putin was visiting North Korea. And this is a security and defense treaty. Now, as part of that treaty, under Article 3, it states, in case a direct threat of armed invasion is created, the two nations shall immediately operate the channel of bilateral negotiations for the purpose of adjusting their stands and discussing feasible practical measures. Article 4 of the treaty states that should either nation be put in a state of war by an armed invasion, the other will provide military and other assistance with all means in its possession without delay, in accordance with Article 51 of the UN Charter. Now, in a week where, firstly, North Korea is very much on the agenda in the EU, at the US, at the UN, as we have said, I think this is certainly going to ruffle some feathers, this partnership being signed. But it also perhaps acts certainly to the US, the UN and EU as a kind of a confirmation that there are indeed North Korean troops helping Russia in Ukraine. As you say, that there's no evidence, but, you know,
so this retrospectively, that would work fine. I mean, you know, who cares in the sense that there are British soldiers in Ukraine? We know that. There's so many multiple sources for that. There were dead British soldiers that were transported back from their support for the N-word, the fascists of Ukraine, only in the past few days. So what difference does it make if there are North Korean troops on the Russian side, even if there were? But certainly that treaty retrospectively would allow for North Korean troops to help Russian and anyone else. And the point of it happening on the day that we get the results from the elections that could well be tied and be for months now be put into some sort of legal lawfare system where no one knows who will be running the United States from January the 20th in name only, because it's, of course, the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower said, that really runs the United States. I think many will be thinking Trump, who knows how to speak to Kim Jong-un and to Vladimir Putin, would be a better pick when it comes to what significance that treaty signed on Wednesday means.
Yeah, that's right. It could make it a big difference. But as to your point on, you know, who cares and why it's significant, on the one hand, we mentioned last week about UK soldiers allegedly in Ukraine. It was reported there was a very small number, perhaps, you know, not necessarily in the armed conflict.
It's not the number, is it? It's not the number that's important. The point is, Britain is a belligerent in the war, and therefore Russia has the right to attack Britain.
Well, no, there is a difference between some troops on the ground helping with equipment and such.
I think the Russians have made it clear, one soldier from one other country makes that country a target.
Yeah.
And as you're saying, the strategic treaty signed means that Britain can also come under North Korean attack as well. Because as we know, the Kursk invasion, the invasion by Zelensky's troops into Russia, just allows the Russians and the North Koreans by treaty to then attack. I mean, I don't think they will. We know how careful Russia is to calibrate their responses to NATO aggression. They waited how many years before they finally did something about the NATO mass murder of Russian people in Donetsk and Luhansk? Was that 6 years after the 2014 Victoria Nuland CIA coup? But certainly, Western Europe better be scared because either candidate, Harris or Trump, is surely not going to be as completely suicidal as Genocide Joe's administration when it comes to Western Europe. And as Western Europe loses its support from its empire chiefs in Washington, will come under attack. Maybe that's why all week these people, why is Scholz? Why is Baerbock and all these people hanging around Kiev to assure Ukraine of continued support as a Trump victory and even perhaps Holocaust Harris victory spells the end for dictator Zelensky. You know, I don't think the betting odds are good on his life, are they, this week?
Okay. Don't know that that's so true. But when you were talking about the numbers, it's true that perhaps that doesn't matter. But the reason the North Korean situation is significant is because, as we were saying, when it comes to the way the US, the UN and the EU are looking at North Korea, who already doesn't see as particularly... doesn't see particularly favorably, it's only going to worsen their attitudes to North Korea if they deem it as helping Russia. So that is the significance and the potential escalation that there can be as a result of that, regardless, I suppose, of whether it's true or how many troops there are, if any. And this partnership deal is probably only going to exacerbate any feeling that these entities have towards North Korea. So that's why I think it's significant. But if we go to another thing happening on Wednesday, what's quite poignant anyway, is that it's the UN designated Worldwide Day, another one of those, a day for preventing the exploitation of the environment in war and armed conflict. And this is a day which is meant to highlight the damage done to the environment during warfare, which affects ecosystems and natural resources after long periods of conflict. We know this is a big problem in war. If we look at just countries like Afghanistan, Colombia, and Iraq, where immense natural resources were lost. In Afghanistan alone, I think there was extensive deforestation, which in some areas hit rates of something like 95% over the period of war there. The UN found over the last six decades, at least 40% of all internal conflicts have been linked to the exploitation of natural resources. We know this, but that's just one aspect. It's obviously one thing to exploit an environment, it's also another to destroy it and the environmental impact that has alone. We know so much of Gaza has been destroyed. It will take hundreds of billions of dollars to be able to rebuild it, if it ever can be, if anyone's prepared to fund it. Potentially 350 years it can take if blockades continue there. But I guess no countries involved in environmental exploitation of countries, particularly in armed conflict, will take any notice of this day on Wednesday, do you think?
No. And I mean, Antonio Guterres, didn't he insult Russia for trying to protect the people of Luhansk and Donetsk in eastern Ukraine? I didn't hear him say, why is NATO backing the Kiev regime, using all these weaponry to destroy the environment of eastern, or what was eastern Ukraine, much as all these so-called Greens in Western Europe. They support mass murder of people in the Holocaust and the destruction of the environment in these regions. There's no such thing as a Green Party in Western Europe, except that Swedish activist who has mysteriously gone silent from NATO propaganda media because she supports Palestine and UN resolutions. So if you're green in Western Europe, do not be like Thelma... What's her name?
I don't know.
You know her name. She's been incredibly courageous on Ukraine. Not on Ukraine. She's been really weak on Ukraine. Oh, come on.
Great.
Huh?
Get the story straight.
Greta Thunberg.
Oh, her.
Yeah, so Greta Thunberg has just disappeared.
Oh.
And you'll not see her anywhere in all the, you know, Sky News propaganda, the child abuse BBC, the Warner Brothers CNN. You're never going to see Greta Thunberg on TV again because she has posed with a Palestinian scarf and said, no, part of my green credentials are saving the lives of all these people and saving the environment, presumably of Gaza and Jerusalem and Lebanon and Iraq and in Syria and in Rafah in Egypt, in all these areas which have been so destroyed by Butcher Blinken, Lloyd Austin, Sullivan.
So you think she's just too political now to be seen in the media outside
That's
of
how it works.
Incremental reading?
Don't believe a word you hear on television or read in a in a legacy media newspaper. They are lying to you, and their entire sets of journalists are lying to you as well. Don't believe a word of it.
Yeah, don't believe any shows you see on YouTube either.
Only believe this show, because it's only on this show.
Yeah, I think if you have to tell people to believe you, then maybe you're not that trustworthy.
I think it's the opposite. They never tell you to believe them on legacy media because they know, or they think they know, they own the public imagination as they themselves are invested in the weaponry that slaughters and beheads and dismembers the heads of children in Gaza. Look at CNN, look at MSNBC, look at ABC News, look at Sky News. They're all invested in their own way in these weaponry companies, even if it's their staff's pensions funds.
Okay. And we're not trying to brainwash.
No, we don't seem to be making any money out of this at all, and that's why. Unless you're going to suddenly tell our viewers to buy gold or buy missiles.
Telling them to invest in Lockheed Martin for quite a while, I've noticed. So I'm kidding. We're certainly not advocating anything on this program. But we better get to Thursday, 7th of November. Now, this is very interesting, I think, on Thursday. So a day or two after Donald Trump potentially has become U.S. president once again, Thursday is the deadline for Trump's legal team to file the response to this special counsel, Jack Smith, regarding Trump's presidential immunity in the case of alleged attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential election 4 years ago. Now, to explain this Jack Smith character, he's trying to argue that the evidence that they plan to use and the allegations that they want to make against Trump in this new indictment would mean that Trump doesn't have presidential immunity as set out by the Supreme Court, so that the scope and the standard for that, they say, is null and void. So Trump's team on Thursday is trying to file a case to dismiss this, and they're claiming that Jack Smith's appointment is unconstitutional, which I think we have mentioned before in this show. But it seems so poignant and absurd that this could potentially be happening as soon as Donald Trump has been elected. Or even if he isn't elected, he'll quite possibly find himself in the same indictment for this 2024 election if he claims the same thing. So it's quite crazy, isn't it? I mean, and this was 4 years ago, so it's taken 4 years for them to decide if he's even got presidential immunity or if he should be charged with this case or if it's going to trial.
I mean, Marxism and communism are always misused as terms by Donald Trump and his cabinet. And November the 7th is October Revolution Day, commemorating, of course, the Soviet Union's revolution. Maybe Trump needs a kind of revolution. If he is elected, as some swing state polling shows, by a landslide, clearly that case that you refer to will not go ahead. And he has said he'll go for it. He'll go and get these people the swamp. He never says drain the swamp anymore, though.
No.
That's a bit suspicious. So he will attack these courts. He will attack these attorney general, the DAs around the country that have been trying to persecute him ahead of this election through lawfare. And presumably, will he finally get arrest warrants out for Bill Clinton, for Hillary Clinton, for Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, for being a spy, for being a Ukrainian oligarch spy? By Wednesday, they'll have to be very quick if they get involved in this. Of course, Judge Napolitano being talked about as a possible attorney general in a Trump administration. We'll be hearing about that. He won't have the power properly to do it until January. So does that mean they'll try and attack him as much as possible in this case will go forward, and they'll try and imprison him after being elected before he takes office on January the 20th? So he'd have to pardon himself, although it's not exactly clear how a state legislature sentence can be overturned by a sitting president, but it can be by the governor. It's a mess there, United States. Its life expectancy is lower in some parts of the United States than North Korea. How interesting. The fact that this law case is going ahead on Wednesday, signs of things to come. Signs of things to come as the Genocide Joe Holocaust Harris administration rises like some sort of monster in a horror movie that you think you've killed, but comes back.
Yeah, well, as you say, how this case will progress may very well depend on the outcome of the election. It is unprecedented as well. So as you say, we don't know what will happen to Trump. I also don't know that he could do that much in the way of prosecuting people as a president. He isn't the law. He's not above the law. I guess if he appoints people that he wants to in certain positions, that could help. But then that would still be a kind of against the law. So I don't know how he can.
But in fairness, they don't have a fair justice system in the United States, because even though the CIA is only supposed to operate externally, there have been some reports they work internally, and the FBI has been completely politicized, as we know, over the past 50 years, more than 50 years. So presumably there would be ways of being able to use the corrupt system in the United States to attack opponents, just as the Harris-Biden administration have done, and so many administrations before that have done to destroy any inkling of democracy in that benighted country.
That's true, but we don't know as well. I think Trump, previously when he was running for president, his rhetoric was much stronger than when he actually became president, and he mellowed out a little bit, and particularly with regards to opponents.
Mellowed out. A corrupt, swampy creature, a useless, worse than the Democrats. Yeah, if Harris wins, obviously that case will be politicized and Trump will be destroyed. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk will be destroyed, the big backer, who's done so much to try and at least improve freedom of speech in the United States. All those people, Giuliani, the former mayor of New York, just think of what a Holocaust Harris administration will do to all of them. They'll all be in jail. That's how U.S. democracy works.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'd say it will be a big factor in what happens with this case. But also on Thursday until Friday, the World Health Organization, on another note, is holding its first ever Global Ministerial Conference on Ending Violence Against Children. That's taking place in Bogota in Colombia. Now, according to the WHO, half of the world's children, so that's 1 billion children, experience violence of some kind. Obviously, the WHO says this increases mental health conditions, risks of it, diseases, cancer, criminal activity, substance abuse, all of these things. Obviously, we know that anyway.
You can see the pictures of dead children every minute on TikTok or on our phone. Britain and the United States and the EU. What a joke. Why doesn't WHO throw out Britain and the United States and European Union countries from it? Anyway, a Trump victory on Tuesday will mean the end of the World Health Organization, arguably. Well,
perhaps.
RFK Jr. will become the head of health in the United States. The biggest funding for WHO comes from the United States.
That's true. But as you mentioned, Gaza, obviously, that's been very much in the news recently on social media, that the children of Gaza, of which there's about 500,000 still alive, who are starving, malnourished, severely injured, probably suffering with a lot of mental health issues themselves, with the trauma and the fear that they're currently experiencing. But the issue of violence and abuse is not just limited to children in Gaza. It's a huge issue, and I suppose the question would be how much this conference is going to change this. I don't know that the WHO is going to be shut down in just a day or so, or whether this is a publicity stunt just to look like that they're making awareness and trying to do something about it. It's a bigger issue than the WHO. War is one aspect, but there's societal, cultural aspects in individual countries. Socioeconomics plays a factor here. I'm sure many other extraneous variables that they've not considered. But the WHO saying we're going to revitalize country commitments for ending violence against children is a pretty nothing statement anyway, isn't it? Regardless of whether they're there or not. I would say it's just for publicity.
And Colombia has been supporting the Nazis of Ukraine, hasn't it? You keep calling it the WHO, so I keep thinking you're talking to about Roger Daltrey and Pete Townsend, and John Entwistle. I'm not sure anyone calls it the WHO. As I said, RFK Jr. will change things there. But if 6% of Gaza has been killed, as some surveys, including the British medical publication, The Lancet, suggested in an estimate, vague estimate, no one really knows because Netanyahu isn't allowing journalists from the outside or peer-reviewed people, scholars, to go in. That's 20 million, mostly women and children, killed by British, American, and European Union weaponry in the past year. Gosh, we're so lucky that there's no response of the similar, you know, in return for what Israel's done to the women and children and men of Gaza and Jerusalem, because that would mean 20 million Americans, mostly women and children, killed. Why is the WHO not having this conference instead of in Colombia, having it in Gaza or having it in Jerusalem? Because these organizations are places where, you know, arguably Michelin star restaurants are the beneficiaries. Big Pharma has a big part to play in WHO as well. And we're now coming to a new stage in the evolution of all of this, I think, especially if Trump wins and RFK Jr. Doesn't even believe in any vaccines, does he?
He's
the head of health in the Trump administration. He'd probably say to the US, I think he's saying no fluoride in the water under a Trump administration.
Yeah, I don't know. Probably not.
What happened to all the famously beautiful American teeth?
Probably not a good idea to talk about it on this platform anyway. But that's the WHO conference.
Oh, well, that does mean that RFK Jr. would be enforcing legislation on YouTube and all the rest of the platforms that they must allow free speech when it comes to healthcare again.
Yeah, well, look, we don't know. We don't know how that would all be worked out. I imagine it won't quite be as simple as that. But that's the WHO conference, or the Who Are They conference, as some might like to say. But we better just quickly mention on Thursday as well, the 5th European Political Community Summit in Budapest in Hungary. On Thursday, leaders from 27 EU member states are going to be attending, I think, in some capacity, along with Albania, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Georgia, Iceland, Kosovo, Liechtenstein, North Macedonia, Norway, Serbia, Switzerland, Turkey, Ukraine, and the United Kingdom. On the agenda is security challenges, migration, and economic security, including connectivity in terms of energy, transport, IT, and global trade, though no Russia invite, interestingly, from Hungary. I assume it might scare everyone else away if Russia is invited, but a bit unusual for Hungary there. Shall we get to Friday so we can
move on? Valdai is continuing all week in Moscow. Vladimir Putin addressing things on the Thursday.
Yes, yeah.
So presumably we'll hear the first reaction to the US result officially from Vladimir Putin on Thursday.
Valdai Discussion Club.
Don't have a time for it yet, but in the Hotel Sochi in Russia.
Yeah, that's on the final day of the Valdai Discussion Club conference, which starts earlier in the week. You'll be speaking on that final day. Friday then, 8th of November. Now on Friday, off the back of the summit in Hungary that we just mentioned for Thursday, Hungary is hosting an informal summit for EU leaders at the same place. Hungary, which still holds the EU presidency up until the end of the year, has done since July. And that's why, despite President Viktor Orban alienating much of the EU, particularly on his Russia stance, as he's more friendly.
Well, they've been alienating him.
Yeah, well, even just doing this, but I think as well, Viktor Orban has said that a Trump victory would force the EU to rethink its support for Ukraine. Do you think that would happen even if Trump does win? I assume that's going to be what he's going to try and say. at this summit on Friday, if Trump does win, he'll try and say that the EU needs to change its position.
I mean, I think if Holocaust Harris wins, then Russia presumably will have to go all in and just finish up the war completely. I mean, Russia's had enough of this nonsense. It obviously considers Ukrainians their brothers and sisters. That's why it hasn't used massive weaponry, the kind of weaponry the United States uses against the poor in the global south. If Holocaust Harris gets in, perhaps Russia will just go in and sort that out once and for all. And if Trump gets in, what? We're supposed to theoretically think of the end of that war and the end of all these European countries' subsidies coming from the United States, because Trump is going to say no. He's not going to keep subsidizing. And they've already lost, what, their energy supply, the Nord Stream pipeline, destroyed by the Biden administration. Pointless.
Yeah, well, I suppose this event is just one of the few this week that kind of depends on the outcome of the US election in how it will proceed on that day.
But also, I mean, interest rates will be cut on the previous day. So it's kind of signaling that the United States economy is stronger because the United States is working with Russia behind the scenes in the fields of energy, trade, and so forth, despite all the headlines that you believe. Europe, Western Europe, screwed. And yeah, you can see that from the appalling levels of economic devastation that we've seen over the past year.
Yeah.
The Prague Defense Summit on Friday. Is that a good day to be having that?
Well, this is something. This is a new summit, isn't it, in Prague?
The
international
war.
Well, this is the International Institute for Strategic Studies, which has partnered with Prague, where they're having this defense.
Who funds them?
Summit. The International Institute for Strategic Studies. You tell me. Probably all the usual.
No. So this is a war hawk organization, IISS. It champions wars all around the world. It supports de facto the mass murder in Gaza and Jerusalem. Completely impartial. UK British charity it is. Oh, lovely.
Well, even so, Braga's partnered with them anyway. This summit is going to be several countries are going to be involved. What they say is it will assemble government leaders, defense officials, analysts, and media from the transatlantic community and beyond.
Wait a minute, this is completely undemocratic. It's in Kafka's home city of Prague. And if you look at the about, it says, it reports publicly the sources of its revenue in general terms, divided between various categories, but not restricted to general donations, individual support, government grants to CIA cutout organizations. It's disgusting that Prague, the city of Kafka, should host the IISS as it tries to expand wars all around the world, surely.
Okay, well, I think as well many defense ministers in EU countries are going to be at this event. I think Germany, for example.
Oh, I got it. Hang on a minute. BAE Systems, Boeing, General Atomics Aeronautical Systems, Raytheon International, Rolls-Royce, the Ministry of Defense's in Northrop Grumman, right, Chevron, the British Army, BP. Yeah, I think you get the idea.
Makes sense as a strategic studies.
What time is it if you want to go down to Prague and protest it happening in your city?
I don't know. I don't think we have the time, do we?
Peter Pavel, the Czech president, will be there, who's a CIA cutout spy and no sovereignty, of course, the Czech Republic.
Yeah. So this isn't going to become a European NATO then, perhaps this brand new defense summit partnership with the IISS remains to be seen. That's happening this week. I think we should go to Saturday, though, and finish up there. Saturday, 9th of November. It's the Russia-Africa Partnership Forum at Sochi University in Sochi. This is a first ministerial meeting, which is going to be taking place on Saturday as part of this forum with the African Union Commission leadership and the heads of foreign policy departments for Russia and African states, which are going. Russia does seem to be very intent on building close relations with the African nations. There was the Russia-Africa summit last year. I think that was the second or third one that they've had. Russia's footprint does seem to be growing there, seems to be very important to Russia. And that may be in part possibly to steal it away from the United States, where many African nations have suffered, particularly economically, as a result of US policies. Many are disillusioned with the UK, which once ruled over many African nations, and many of them are now pulling away from the UK. So I don't know, this is quite a strategic move, isn't it, of Russia to be very getting very close with the countries of Africa, with all these summits and partners.
I mean, all the optimism about parts of Africa finally throwing over the imperial yoke should be tempered by the fact there is a CIA is still out there. They know Africa has, Africa's the richest continent because of its mineral wealth and all the rest of it, and its people, and its people as well. Mm-hmm. Britain, the United States, the European Union have successfully destroyed the lives of hundreds of millions of people in Africa over generations. Can they continue doing it despite the fact the superpowers of BRICS as an organization tries to enmesh itself with Africa and stop it from being indentured slave to the IMF and World Bank? There's still, it's not okay yet. And I mean, you can imagine a Trump Kamala Harris, she's Indian, is she? Who is she from?
It depends on what day it is. Right.
She tries to fake she's African, doesn't she? She doesn't.
I think she has some African heritage as well, somewhere in her life.
We know how dangerous it is for an American president to have African heritage. Look at Obama and how he destroyed Africa's richest per capita country, Libya. So that's quite scary on its own. Luckily, you'd think Donald Trump doesn't know where Africa is, perhaps. So maybe it would make Africa safer. Mm-hmm. In some way, but there'll be a military-industrial complex behind it telling him, we need the uranium from Congo, we need the lithium from here, we need this from there. It'll be China, it'll be a battleground.
Well, that's it. And as we've said before on this show, the President of the United States only holds so much power, right? And it's the people behind the scenes who are typically making a lot of these decisions. But again, that's something that will be significant as part of the US election this week. But let's quickly finish on Sunday. I'm conscious this is getting quite long. 10th of November, there are parliamentary elections. To some, this will be the big election of the week for those who live in the luxury holiday destination of Mauritius in East Africa. These elections are coming a few weeks after Mauritius and the UK just signed a treaty back in October to transfer the Chagos Islands from the UK to Mauritius as
Diego Garcia base. They're not giving the Diego Garcia base to Mauritius from where they launch attacks, are they?
Yeah. Okay. So there's nuance in this. Ultimately, the Chagos Islands has been a British territory. I think Mauritius was as well until the 60s, where it said the Chagos Islands was their own. So the British are trying to concede in some way, at least.
Sorry to interrupt there, but on Mauritius, on that, this is how it's been characterized by some. Starmer's filthy Chagos Island deal preserves Diego Garcia as a key US UK military base. After decades of legal battles, Keir Starmer Labour government agreed to hand over the Chagos Island. Far from remedying a long-standing injustice, it's a filthy deal that rides roughshod over the rights of the Chagosian islanders in the defence of British imperialism. So all one can hope from the Starmer situation is a de Tocqueville-style easing which allows revolutionary action against the imperial powers of Britain and the United States. Very difficult to attack the illegally occupying Diego Garcia base that is used by the United States. It was used in the war that killed, wounded, or displaced tens of millions in Iraq. Will Mauritians know about that? Will the Mauritian people be able to do anything against Britain and the United States?
Yeah, well, this is very much obviously happening in the background of the election. Some Mauritians might be grateful to the incumbent prime minister for getting some kind of deal. Others may be saying, well, he didn't do a good enough job because they haven't got everything that they've wanted and it's taken so many decades.
Very poor country. And there was an eco disaster in the summer because of a Japanese ship that caused a complete disaster. Thousands of metric tons of fuel if you happen to be going on holiday in Mauritius. How much does it owe the IMF?
Probably quite a lot, I imagine. It is quite a poor country, just despite the tourism that it takes in. But
81% of GDP debt. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, clearly Mauritius needs to be partnering with China, with Russia, with India. BRICS.
Yes, and maybe a part of the African summit with Russia just the day before the partnership conference. But when it comes to the election itself, so the incumbent prime minister is Pravin Jugnauth. He's part of the militarist socialist movement led coalition. He won 42 seats in the last election in 2019. There's 62 members in total. Now, there is actually a bit of controversy internally surrounding this election in that the Mauritius government has cut off access to all social media platforms until the 11th of November, so a day after the election. And that's because there were audio leaks of, I think, 20 high-ranking politicians, police, lawyers, journalists, mainly on TikTok. This came out and that was seen as a security breach by the government, although opposition parties like the Alliance for Change Party, which is headed by Navin Ramgoolam, he's the main challenger to the prime minister. He says the ban was a political move to avoid defeat. So, of course, if you are Mauritian, let us know what you make of all of this and who you'll be voting for and what you make of your social media. Well, I guess you probably can't watch this before the election because your social media accounts are going to be banned. There's a population of 1.2 million who's going to be making this decision, but quite controversial, I think, here in Mauritius, and quite a complicated one.
Yeah, I mean, it's been ruled by a NATO proxy, CIA cutouts, and you can see that in its voting record supports for the Nazis in Ukraine. So, you know, there'll be hopes of some kind of change, but how are they going to possibly overthrow their government if they don't have the information? And the information is not allowed to them because social media is banned. It's like the United States election earlier in the week, where social media oligarchs run them and stop the United States people from being able to see the truth because they ban pro-Trump stuff on social media.
This is it. But we will await to see the outcome of that. But before we finish, I'll just quickly mention, of course, on Sunday, it's Remembrance Sunday in the UK. And actually, you briefly mentioned it last week. It's a commemoration for the servicemen and women who worked in the World War One and World War Two, always held on the nearest Sunday to Armistice Day, which marked the armistice signing between the Allies and Germany in World War One. It's also used now as a commemoration in the UK of all wars that the UK has been involved in, where UK soldiers, civilians, anyone from the UK have died more than 1 million.
Died in the fight for oppressing other people. King Charles attending that Remembrance Sunday Cenotaph mm-hmm. service. For our British viewers, I understand there's some sort of viral, they have a fourth channel documentary going that shows that King Charles and his son, William, Bill, or something, they're both slumlords. And there's chaos, I understand, cries to overthrow the monarchy. So maybe his Remembrance Sunday Cenotaph service won't be that much fun for him, will it? Anyway, it's supposed to be the war that will end all wars. Of course, when Charles puts down that wreath, he knows it's soaked in the blood of the heads of babies of Gaza that Britain is causing the deaths of. We know their Cyprus base is deeply involved in the conflict to helping Netanyahu, mass murder in the Holocaust of our age.
Okay, but still an important commemoration for just people in the UK who commemorate their families and ancestors, family members who have been killed in previous wars. But we better
leave... Lions led by donkeys is the phrase.
Okay. We better leave it there, though. On that note, thank you very much. If you're watching or listening to this, please leave a comment, subscribe, turn on the notification bell, and you'll be notified when a new video comes out each week. Let us know what you think of the upcoming events, who you think is going to win in the US election. Please let us know, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.